Blog Talk Radio.
Let's get it on!
Sprawl and brawl, ground and pound. Get ready for an MMA showdown. Now, the ultimate Octagon Insider, Sean and Tristan Ducrosse.
Welcome, everybody. You're listening to a brand new edition of the Sports Warriors right here on Blog Talk Radio. We are your boys. We are the hosts of this fine show. I'm Tristan Ducrosse. Along my side, as always, my partner in crime, Sean Ducrosse. We are back this week, and it's a brand new show. Tristan, sometimes life is just rough, isn't it? Absolutely, Sean. It's so true. We got El Nino that's hitting San Diego and SoCal, period. And there was also apparently a storm that was just brewing in the UFC 195 recently. So, UFC 195 saw some ruthless aggression that we haven't seen since, well, quite some time. It's one of those things that is a rare commodity when you see MMA fighters and you see people engage in the octagon. Well, ruthless Robbie Lawler is simply one of them. He embodies and embraces what he has in his heart, and that is just ruthless aggression. That is something he brings every single time to the table. That's what he did against Carlos Condit. You and I differ on opinions. You and everybody else broke the internet at UFC 195 when it came to the outcome of ruthless Robbie Lawler versus Carlos Condit.
And it wasn't even Kim Kardashian's butt that broke the internet. It was Carlos Condit versus Robbie Lawler that broke the internet this time.
But yes, Sean, this would probably be the most contested, hot debated topic in quite some time, just by the pure reality of the fact that it came down to basically one round to differentiate who was going to be crowned either and still or the new champion. So at any point in time, you have anything that is like that about a fight that is so close to call. We've always said it, that never leave it to the judges. You can't. But there are several things that you could pick out about an issue about how this was scored, how it wasn't. Robbie Lawler, hands down, is one of the top five fighters in the world right now, period, bar none. Can't touch it.
But you see, that's where you're wrong in my eyes, is that you can touch it, okay? You know, everybody's going to sit back and say that what Robbie Lawler doing is something you haven't seen in quite some time. And for a guy that was caught sleeping during press conferences and everything else during his time, being a puffed up middleweight, for him to finally find his ground as a welterweight, you could still find flaws in him holding on to the title. Because of the fact that when you see him, see who he's fought. Johnny Hendricks, Roy McDonald. The only guy out of those two guys that brought the game to ruthless Robbie Lawler was that of Johnny Hendricks. Because Johnny Hendricks, yes, you know he was a banger, but he could also grapple down in the octagon. He could take you down on the mat. You look at the last several fights that Robbie Lawler has done, they all have one thing in common.
They're going to stand right in front of you.
Exactly. So is this such a great run that he's on, or is it just simply the right fights are being put in front of him at the right time that is entertaining to the fans?
Okay, but then here's another situation that I have with Robbie Lawler right now, is that, yes, he's putting on some exciting fights. Yes, they're putting on fighters that are in front of him that are not afraid to go out there and essentially bang with him. But at this point of his career, Sean, how good is this long-term for him, though? To have this kind of run in the UFC, to have that title around him, how much longer can he do this standing in front of guys that are literally out there to basically end his career? Carlos Condit made it known coming into this fight that he had one mission, and he was going to bring that fight. Carlos Condit did. And even to the point where at the end of the fight, both men were draped over the side of the cage. I'm all for exciting fights. I'm all for, hands down, one of the top top fights in the world. But I am confused with the progression of Robbie Lawler and the evolution of him to get to the point where he is right now, that I am fearful that long-term-wise, he's not going to be the same Robbie Lawler. And I don't think he's going to have much more left in his title run if he continues to face guys like this.
I guess when you look at what Robbie Lawler has gone through in his lifetime, why not go out with a bang, essentially? Why not? You've got nothing left to prove. You have nothing left on the table. You're the welterweight champion of the world. You've won two Fight of the Night awards. Quite frankly, you don't have a lot left. So if this is the way you're going to go out, bravo. But at the same time, let's look at the other candidates that are on the chopping block. Because I'll get to Carlos Condon in a second. I got to touch on him for a second because it boggles my mind about something. So Robbie Lawler, who's next?
Robbie Lawler says Carlos Condon.
But does Carlos Condon deserve it? No. Because of the fact that how does a guy, this is counting his loss against Robbie Lawler, in the last six fights, Carlos Condon is 2-4. So prior to that fight, he was 2-3 in his last five fights. 2-3. Not even a winning record. But this guy got a fight against Carlos Condon over Damian Maia, over Tyrone Woodley, over even a rematch with Rory McDonald. Carlos Condon and Condon got a rematch. I mean, got an opportunity to fight for the welterweight title. It doesn't make any sense. It's a political game, top to bottom, about who is on whose good side right now, it seems like. Because you're seeing it right now with Frankie Edgar. Frankie Edgar should be the clear-cut guy who fights Conor McGregor next. That should be the guy. And then Conor McGregor
can move up.
Then goes up to 155. But he should not be going up to 155 before he fights the number one contender. But wait, you got to be a company man. You got to be by the book. Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. Okay. I'll do this. I'll say this. I'll cross this T. I'll dot this I. But yet you'll have certain people that could be at the peak of the game, and then you're okay with that. But yet you have a guy like Damian Maia, who's in his 40s, continuing to show growth and continue to show promise again. What we preach, what we say every show, MMA world, you need to evolve to be great. If you don't evolve, you will not materialize. Damian Maia does exactly that. You know who he is? Dude, Sean, Neil Magny lost to Damian Maia. And you know what Neil Magny went out and did?
Went to a Damian Maia camp, Sean, and to learn under Damian Maia. Are you serious? That's all the growth in the sport. If you want to become great, you want to become better than what you currently are, you continue to work at. Prove your worth. Prove your stay. It is simple as that in the UFC. If you stand there and you don't progress, it'll leave you. Carlos Condon losing to Robbie Lawler leaves questions. I immediately thought T. Woodley should get the shot. I heard T. Woodley run his mouth after the event, demanding that he should be the next one in line over Damian Maia. To each his own. You're always going to have guys that are going to battle about who should be first, who should be second. How about we do what's best for business, and we put the best fight, period. Whether it's Damian Maia or Woodley, doesn't matter. A rematch should not happen gradually at this point. I'm overseeing Carlos Condit 1, Carlos Condit versus Robbie Lawler 1, Carlos Condit versus Robbie Lawler 2, Carlos Condit versus Robbie Lawler 3. Enough of these one-ups every single time about, well, he's fought so-and-so, he gets a rematch. Let's go version two. We can't keep doing this in the MMA world. It's repetitive. It's redundant. So I think either T. Woodley or Damian Maia should get it. But then what does that mean for Carlos Condit? Where does Carlos Condit go from here?
And to touch on your point, you believe Tyrone Woodley should get the opportunity.
I think either or I'm okay with.
See, I'm a Tyrone Woodley fan, essentially, okay? I like Tyrone Woodley, just like you do. But there's that red flag, that uncertainty. And the uncertainty that comes with it is Tyrone Woodley comes with a lot of baggage. The last time he's fought is almost a year ago. He talks a big game, but he's off doing movies. So I begin to look at the positioning, okay, of does he in fact deserve the title shot? After further discussion with my own self, no, Tyrone Woodley does not deserve the shot. Yes, you know what? He defeated a Rory McDonald. He defeated a Kelvin Gastelum. But there's two flaws in those two opponents. Rory McDonald, at the time that Tyrone Woodley beat him, was a Rory McDonald that was trying to still discover himself. He didn't know who he was
or what he wanted to become.
You look at him defeating Kelvin Gastelum, the guy that has history of missing weight. So at the end of the day, how does that warrant him a position as the number one contender? But you go ahead and you look at Damian Maia, and you're just like, okay.
Running off wins again.
Running off wins. The interesting thing about this one is the fact that Damian Maia is a world-class grappler. You know exactly what he's going to do and what it's going to take in that fight. Robbie Lawler has not been tested on the mat in quite some time. Why not? The last time we saw him on the mat essentially was against Johnny Hendricks or back in his Strikeforce days. That, you know, when he gets down on his back, he looks at the ref and goes, really?
Stand us up.
So you look at that fight, that's interesting to me. Or, again, you go to the winner, Johnny Hendricks or Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. Those two guys will fight. Do we see a trilogy finally with Johnny Hendricks? Or do we get this rising phenom in Stephen Thompson? He opposes an interesting counterpart to Robbie Lawler that hasn't fought on a stand-up game. We've always talked about that. An interesting component is that if you are a good karate guy and you're able to stand up and strike at a high level, you're unique and you oppose a threat that is untested by anybody else. Stephen Thompson is that guy. You want a different striker, a different guy to oppose a different threat? I would say if Johnny Hendricks gets defeated by the rising star in Stephen Thompson, there's no question in my mind Stephen Thompson should be that guy. I'm sorry, Damian Maia, but in this situation, I would like to see new blood.
And that's what I keep saying is that Maia Woodley, let's put somebody else into that title shot fight to see something other than trilogies, other than back-to-back fights or rematches. It's so blown way out of proportion that you're thinking that, dude, I just beat you, and you automatically get a rematch. Like, that's the dumbest thing ever. Dude, I beat you back to the line. That's the way it should be. I beat you back to the line. I beat you back to the line. Next up, let's go.
This isn't wrestling.
No, but I'm just saying. I'm tired of seeing those same three or four people fighting.
No,
so
that's
let's keep it going.
That's what I mean, is that this isn't wrestling. When you look at wrestling and you look at WWE or you look at Impact Wrestling, if you look at those two things, what do they have in common? The same top five people over and over again. Rinse and repeat. Rinse and repeat. Why is it that WWE has NXT and we still don't know half their talent that's coming up through the woodwork? All you've got is the new blood, is that you got Kevin Owens and you got Neville. And you got some other guys in the line. Well, those are the only two big guys. And then in the UFC, who do you have? So I agree with your sentiment. Back to the line. Stop regurgitating the same five people and let's see the growth of mixed martial arts.
And that's the fun part right there. I'm looking at – then you look at – here's another fight, Sean. Here's another fight. Stipe Miocic versus Andrei Arlovski. Again, you're talking about an ageless wonder. Talk about – you're talking about Andrei Arlovski. 40 – almost 40 years old or is 40 years old, roughly around there. I was looking at this matchup as ultimately being, you know, the matchup to face Fabricio Werdum and Cain Velasquez. But the issue I had with this is that I wanted to see Rothwell in a fight, but we didn't get Rothwell. We get Stipe Miocic versus Andrei Arlovski. And once again, Andrei has, Sean, he has the world at his fingertips, literally at his fingertips, that he could do no wrong, that everything that he has fought for is in front of him. And once again, for some reason, that last run that he claims to have gets a sudden jolt and a stop because Stipe Miocic knocked him out. It leaves an interesting heavyweight division because Miocic yelling at the top of his lungs in the center of the cage, give me my effing title shot. Walked over to Dana White and says, give me my effing title shot. Walked over to Joe Rogan and said, it's a nice shirt. I like that. Give me my title shot. Here's a guy that doesn't really talk, never really talked. But again, you're looking at the mainstream right now of MMA. It's about who can sell a fight, who can sell a card, who can talk. Miocic now understands that little nugget, understands that at this point of his career, if he has that title run in him, people are going to have to understand and know who he is, and or else he's going to get he's just going to be another guy.
And you're talking about just another guy, and you know what? This is a perfect situation to implement a new portion of the show that we're going to put in starting today is that so anybody that knows the show knows that we do have a little bit of a truthfulness to us that it really doesn't matter if you're an MMA fighter, an MMA promotion, if you put something out there for blast, we're going to call you out on your BS. So this is what we call shots fired. The first up is Andrei Arlovski. So when you look at it, get him, John. Andrei Arlovski has been up and down for so many years. This guy has all the intangibles you want in a heavyweight fighter. But the drawback to this guy, it seems to be that he gets in his own way. And he seems like when he's rising to the top, he's quick to the fall. It's like watching Jack and the Beanstalk climb up the beanstalk and him fall all the way back down. When you realize that at some point in time, you got to get mentally tough. If you're not mentally tough, you're not going to be successful. He's not mentally tough. When you look at the fact that he fought Stipe Miocic, when you look at this fight, it should have been just that, a fight. He shouldn't have been knocked out in 54 seconds. It should have been Miocic getting knocked down in 54 seconds. If this was Andrei Arlovski that was progressing as a fighter, the guy that we said was evolving, the guy that we said that, you know what, at the end of the day, he was the it guy. He was the next one in line. But again, he got in his way. To coin a phrase, to coin a statement that was said a while ago, that was back in the day, by Dennis Green. He is who exactly we thought he was. So you know what? Go ahead and crown him. That's a phrase from the Duke Cross Brothers, the Sports Warriors. he got crowned, knocked off his throne by Miocic. Miocic's next opponent should be the winner. Oh, wait. It's not about should. Miocic will get the winner of Werdum versus Velasquez. And again, do we see a title change against Fabricio Werdum and Cain Velasquez? Or does Fabricio still hold that title and walk out on top? Remains to be seen. But you know what? That's what I call shots fired. And we also have one more coming up, too, and I got that one. More with the DuCross Brothers and the Sports Warriors right here on Blog Talk Radio. We're your boys. Coming up next, we're joined with a very special guest, Jason Weiner of the up-and-comers UPC Unlimited. He's bringing a team from SoCal to the Fight Source, the Fighter Source League. It's going to be crazy January 9th at Harrah's Casino. If you're in town in the San Diego, you local, you better be there. More with the DuCross Brothers right up after this.
Excelsior, Imperis Rex, live long and prosper, up, up, and away. Now that's my personal favorite. Fanboy Nation is go. Welcome to Fanboy Nation Magazine, the home of all things fanboy and fangirl, not just the same stuff you can get anywhere else. Only at Fanboy Nation will we go beyond the generic questions of, so what's your favorite pencil? What kind of strings do you use? And how did it feel when you put on X costume? We give you insight into the lives of the artists, producers, the movers, the shakers, the indies, up-and-comers, the bigwigs, and most importantly, the little guys. If you haven't gotten yourself over to fanboynation.com, you need to do it today.
You are listening right now to the DuCross Brothers here on Blog Talk Radio. To check out more of the DuCross Brothers, head over to thehotspotshow.com.
All right, everybody, we are back. We are the DuCross Brothers, the Sports Warriors. I'm Tristan DuCross. On my side, as always, my partner in crime, the one and only, Sean DuCross. Tristan, Rising Fight Federation came up this past week, and it left you with an underwhelming feeling of what it could have been that it wasn't.
It's funny because there's a lot of mixed feelings about this Rising event. And like always, we rise to the occasion, but Rising didn't really rise to the occasion.
Yes, there were some wow moments. There was some wow factor. A lot of flair, a lot of wrestling implantations in this. We saw the original Voice of Pride at this event. The opening with the general manager coming out to the center of the ring in a garb and standing there and whatever the heck he was saying. We should have had subtitles on the USA version of this. Might have been better. Huge arena, great entrances, but the fights were lack thereof. And I say that because when I'm looking at these fighters, and we knew that there was going to be some fighters that were going to be left scratching their head, like, dude, are you serious right now? This is what you're putting on. But then again, it doesn't really surprise me because if anybody knew about the Pride days, okay. You have literally seen Fedor Emelianenko, who is like 5'10" versus a dude that is 7'5". It has happened. You've seen guys like Bob Sapp fight guys that are three times his size. We've seen it all. It's always been a crazy kind of Japan kind of feel to it. That's what they've always been about. People say don't compare Rising FF. Of Fight Federation to Pride, but you can't help it because the ring was the same. The music was the same. Everything was the same, except for the name. Everything. They brought a couple guys from Pride, from the Pride days, You brought guys from Road FC. You guys brought guys from Bellator. I mean, all around the world. You have just grabbed as many people as you possibly could from around the world, and you claim that these were going to be – that people were going to rise. And that was so far-fetched because you saw Bob Sapp take on a guy in Acapulco, and he's 46 years old. Dude could barely walk. Dude looked like he was 800 pounds, and he almost split his head like a watermelon.
That's what happens when you got a sumo wrestler involved in a fight.
I don't care. At 46 years old, if you can barely walk and you can barely talk and you're going to get a guy like Bob Sapp, dude, you should have trained harder. You should have been in better physical shape than that. Even if you were a sumo wrestler, you should have been in sumo shape, whatever that is. But to get your head split wide open like a, almost like a watermelon, you could have killed him. And then you look at Aoki versus Sakuraba, and that fight should have been over in like 10 seconds.
We'll touch on it in a second, but what? 10-minute first round? Really, people?
You sound like your wife. Your wife is like, huh, what's going on here? Why is it taking forever? And then you're like, oh, it's 10-minute rounds. And she looked at you like, you stupid.
Well, apparently the guy that passed out was stupid. He was like, oh.
Dude, 10 minutes and that dude looked like he was dead. Stand up. Can't.
But I say the 10-minute round because you look at the fact is that when you saw the legendary Sakuraba go in against Aoki.
Say it right, please. Aoki!
For 5 minutes, 5 minutes, Sakuraba, the Gracie Hunter, was beat so bad that it ruined any legacy he ever had. At least when Ken Shamrock took on Kimbo Slice, it didn't really ruin anything because he got beat in T-minus 2 seconds. It is what it is. But to see Sakuraba get beat for 5 minutes, 5 minutes of pure hell where he couldn't buck off Aoki to save his life.
Dude, that was bad.
It was hard to watch. You put that fight in a Bellator ring or you put that fight in a UFC fight, that fight was stopped in 1 minute flat because he was getting his butt beat so bad.
The fact that you had a referee standing right there over Sakuraba, and again, I can't tell you what the referee was saying because he was yelling it in Japanese. So I don't know what he was yelling at Sakuraba like. Maybe, Sakuraba, fight. Sakuraba, fight. Sakuraba, defense. Sakuraba, do something. I'm going to stop this. Yep, going to stop this. And ultimately, that's what he had to have said to Sakuraba because Aoki, from the minute, Sakuraba, 46 years old. Apparently, he's never been taken down in his whole entire career, and yet Shinoa Aoki did it in 2 seconds. You know you're old when your legs are wrapped with, like, bandages and stuff. You know you're old. Do we need to give him a walker?
I think this is going to go underneath... shot fired because he, quite frankly, with the taped up knees, he looked like a burn victim.
That is very true. And I also got another one that would also be around the same issue that I have, is that we also saw Lady Tapa versus Gabby Garcia. Yeah, it's about time. Absolutely. Right now, headhunter time. I'm going to snipe shot. It is very simple that people were talking about Gabby Garcia and high-level striking. I want to know what high-level striking actually is.
when you look at the high level striking that's being claimed, it's sad to see these two fighters, because people talk about Gabby Garcia being this high quality Brazilian jiu-jitsu artist. Take her down. It's all good. But yet she decided to stand there and try to fight. I don't know what high-level striking she was taking. Maybe it was from a two-year-old in a kickboxing class. Maybe we're looking at some girl that was in a hot yoga, Muay Thai kind of wannabe class or something. I don't know. But whatever high-level striking she was getting taught clearly was not it, because she could not turn over a punch. She's basically slapping. Like, if I want to see a girl with a hair-pulling match, this probably could have been it. If this was a YouTube video of two girls fighting in a restroom or something, this could have been it.
It was like watching a basketball team fighting on the floor.
Or it was like the baseball brawl where you got guys pulling each other from the necks and the shirts and slapping upside the head. Or like a wide receiver versus a DB, and you get in a fight, and for some reason they think it's okay to try to punch the helmet. Because that makes sense. This did not make sense.
Let's just flail and throw our arms out there and see if we're going to hit each other.
Sean, your wife throws a better punch than those two.
That's pretty true. True. Probably stings a little bit more with her punches than those two girls do at any point except for the one left from Lady Tapa.
One good punch out of that whole entire thing. That was about it. And then, are you kidding me? That finish? Are you serious? Let me just paw your face, hold your face, and then I'm going to rabbit punch you. And look at the ref saying, you going to stop me? Please, stop this fight. Stop it for all humanity, all the fight fans, all the women fight fans. I'm sorry, I don't know how to fight. And then they ultimately stopped it. It went way too long, and it should never even happen. That is ridiculous. Those two girls should never step in a wrestling ring or an octagon ever again. Ever again.
It was just bad all the way around. And
that? Boy, what are you talking about? Did you not see the fight? That was horrendous.
It was. Like, my notes for this was just simply, dude, WTF. Like, seriously? This could have been so much better. At least it was hyped to be so much better. For a girl, as Gabby Garcia is touted as a world-class Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
On steroids.
Doesn't matter. She's supposed to have this great jiu-jitsu, but yet she's trying to stand there and bang. And it just looked awkward. She stood a better shot at getting that fight to the mat and just not throw punches.
Dude, the only bright side about this was our boy, King Mo the Wall. He ran through the whole entire heavyweight division to be crowned Ryzen's tournament champion.
But you know what? Hold up for that one. But that was shot fired on, well, Gabby Garcia. And now we've got King Mo. That was one of the lone bright spots for this fight. And then when you look at it, and you look at what King Mo did, he knocked out not one, but two guys in this tournament.
Yuri, the guy that said, everybody said that Yuri was going to be the guy that was going to be the last person standing. But by the end of the night, dude looked like he was a guy from Walking Dead. He showed up, went against King Mo the Wall, and I'm still trying to figure out, I still keep playing this. Like, I think about the gift with what's the quarterback's name? Sutton?
Oh, yeah.
Where he goes.
Drew Stanton.
Drew Stanton, when he's doing that gift that's been all over on Facebook that I can't get enough of it.
The one that you shared for New Year's. I feel like this.
I swear, that's going to be my next gift for, you know what? Today, I feel like Yuri. Get hit in the face and face plant. Because,
well, just ask our guys from Fightbook, and they'll probably be able to put the Drew Stanton and the Yuri gift together and blend it and say, here's your ultimate gift of what Yuri looked like getting knocked out.
And then this is what King Mo does. Yes.
Well, considering what King Mo did with the dolphin. Like, okay.
And that's funny. Your wife looked at you like, what is he doing? You're like, he's doing the dolphin. And you're like, what is that? Oh, you need to YouTube that because that's called the dolphin. That's a, I'm not even going to say it because that's kind of like on the other side of the fence issue.
But that's one thing we talked about is that you saw one legend fall, one legend rise. King Mo continues to be all about the money. He's team money. Over 40,000 yen, which is $332,000 in the U.S.
He got paid.
That boy got paid over $250,000 to show up in Japan, beat three jabronis, and walk out of there.
Clearly, life's rough for King Mo right now.
Right.
Clearly, it's so rough. He's walked out as the Rising Grand Prix champion, walking around with that big gold belt, walking away with over $300,000 again of worth of money. Man, that is so rough. While everybody else is trying to make ends meet.
And yeah, he goes out there and knocks out two, wins one, and he walks out of there with that kind of money. What power to him.
But
he deserves it, though. Out of everybody else, dude, his striking, his high-level striking was so much better than Gabby Garcia.
King Mo the Wall put everything on display once again in Japan, where he has grown so much, grown leaps and bounds. But he was always one of the best people in Japan. He made his career in Japan. To come back to Japan and leave champion,
we got to give it up to him.
And you know what's interesting was the fact that King Mo was put into this tournament and won and walked away with the heavyweight title. But Fedora Emelianenko returns to essentially a reincarnation of Pride, where his home and his style was embodied in Japan. And he doesn't get the opportunity to fight for a vacant world title.
Fedor Emelianenko beat up a kid that said, I'm going to be the future Rising. Dude, he fell. Half the stuff I was thinking about. We're going to see people that are going to rise to the occasion. We're going to see people rise. But boy, did half the people that talk so much junk coming out of this about how they were going to be the future of Rising FF. Boy, you guys now look dumber than dirt. Because this kid, Jadeep, supposed to be this pronounced boxer, this kickboxer in Japan, supposed to be this. And yet this guy couldn't even throw a jab. And then got taken down by Fedor, and I just got to say that. Fedor Emelianenko, you do have to admit that even at this stage of his game, his transitions, his floatovers, he was better this time than he was last time when he lost.
And I'm torn between this, okay? I heard all about The Last Emperor. I heard about how great Fedor was or is in Japan. I heard
yet
it all.
We were never fans of his. We always saw holes in him.
No, because it's much like when you see people transition to the U.S.-style MMA game.
Some are successful, some are not.
He was not. He was not successful in our era, in this time. So when you look at it, is him going back to Japan a safety valve? Was that something that he needed to do to regain his form and his name recognition still? Is that what he needed to do, was go back to Japan? Because he couldn't cut it in the United States.
But so then you're going to handpick and feed him opponents? To build this legacy, to build up this Last Emperor, you're okay with falsifying records? Last time I checked, that gets you prison time. At some point, Did you just really say that? It gets you prison time?
It does. Like, dude, if you falsify your IRS records, they coming for you. You falsify your birth certificate, they coming for you. You falsify your record in MMA, I don't care who you are, they should be coming for you.
I guess that's what King Mosden is doing. Says that he wants Fedor in a Bellator ring.
Dude, again, King Mo would literally fight anybody off the street for a payday. He wants to shut up all these so-called legends, all these naysayers. He wants to be that man that says, dude, enough of your mouth, enough of your time. It is my time. People need to talk about me. And I'm okay with that. He wants to take on Fedor Emelianenko. Emelianenko got an opponent for Russia at Ryzen FF2. We'll get that name here soon.
Well, actually,
we also heard that
they're not going to Russia yet. Their next show is April 17th in Nagoya City. Then the next one will be
in Russia.
Right.
But Fedor is going to be on that second card.
And then he'll
be on that third card.
And he'll be on the fourth card. And he'll be on the fifth card.
But, dude, that fight was even offered to Ray Sefo. I think even Ray Sefo in 5 weeks could have done a better job than Jadid.
But Ray Sefo's like, I'm not going to fight Fedor in 5 weeks for an MMA fight. It takes me 5 weeks to do kickboxing. It's going to take me longer than 5 weeks to fight MMA. He was smart. Why would you want to fight Ryzen when you have a World Series of Fighting that you should be worried about enough right now with? So he did the right thing by backing out of that fight and not accepting it. But there were so many things. The fact that for the United States people, if you weren't watching on the internet and through some odd level of, well, I think it's streaming from this site. Well, if you are very comfortable in it, go for it. If you're not comfortable in it, you may get spyware or spam or whatever else you may get. But that's the only way you could watch that fight. The second day was on 3 hours on Spike TV. It was, well, I think this was good. I think this was good. We showed this. We should show that. And it just left you scratching your head like,
that was lame.
You picked those fights for 3 hours. The only one that made you go, oh,
was the King Mo and the Fury fight.
Yes, because he slipped over, dropped that right, and just punked him.
Dude, he walked like a zombie. Like, why would you walk with your hands down like you're a zombie from Walking Dead going, and then socked him right across the face and lights out?
Because he wanted to act like Sakuraba? I don't know.
Dude, the only other entertaining thing was that you saw, what is his name? Nakashima spit out a tooth?
Oh, he went to the dentist moment where he somehow knocked out his own tooth and spit it out?
We saw a pro wrestler from the IWGP Cruiserweight Champion take on to Nagashima.
All we were missing is some run-in from the Bullet Club in Japan.
Dude, that would have been epic, though.
That would have probably saved Ryzen FF.
The Bullet Club come running down to save Andy Sauer.
But Andy Sauer got the knockouts. That wouldn't really have helped unless they were there to turn heel and actually help out Nagashima. But you know what?
They should put the IWGP Cruiserweight title on the line for those two. Then we could have had a run-in.
All right, well, with that being said, we are the DeCross Brothers and Sports Warriors. We'll be right back with up-and-comers founder and owner Jason Weiner joining us.
Excelsior in Paris Rex. Live long and prosper. Up, up, and away. Now that's my personal favorite. Fanboy Nation is go. Welcome to Fanboy Nation magazine, the home of all things fanboy and fangirl, not just the same stuff you can get anywhere else. Only at Fanboy Nation will we go beyond the generic questions of, so what's your favorite pencil? What kind of strings do you use? And how did it feel when you put on X costume? We give you insight into the lives of the artists, producers, the movers, the shakers, the indies, up-and-comers, the bigwigs, and most importantly, the little guys. If you haven't gotten yourself over to fanboynation.com, you need to do it today.
All right, everybody, we are back. We are your boys. We are the New Cross Brothers of Sports Warriors. I'm Tristan New Cross. Along my side, as always, is my brother, Sean New Cross. And so, before we get into up-and-comers UPC Unlimited interview with Jason Weiner, just want to let you know, if you want to see what we were talking about Ryzen FF, head over to Fightbook MMA, and you will be able to see all the fights, what we're talking about, and how they just simply left you scratching your head. And please, watch the Gabby Garcia versus Lady Tapa and the high-level striking. So, when you're talking about high-level striking, that's one thing you have to look forward to with up-and-comers. And we had a chance to speak to the owner and founder of Up-and-Comers Amateur Promotion that is coming here to Harris January 9th. So stay tuned.
Oh, it's true.
So Jason Weiner, owner of UPC, Up-and-Comers Unlimited, with the Ducross Brothers, with Sean and Tristan, the Sports Warriors. Welcome to the show. Before we get into about this event that's coming up, explain to us about the concept of up-and-comers and how this came about.
Up-and-comers came about I've been around the MMA industry for probably about 6-7 years, and I started out actually helping Scott Coker and Strikeforce when they'd come to Fresno way back in the day, and I always thought the name up-and-comers would be a great name for promotion, and I started it 3 years ago, and we've done actually 4 years ago, and we've done about 27 shows. I've probably had 16 or 17 guys move on to fight either in Bellator or the UFC or now some in World Series of Fighting. And, of course, my most recent product we put out was Chris Honeycutt, who's in Bellator and one of their top prospects. So that's kind of where up-and-comers came from. And then there was the Fighter Source League, and this is actually the third year of the Fighter Source League. It's my second year as a team owner. And the Fighter Source League is really the ultimate amateur experience for any MMA fighter out there. And as you guys know, an amateur who turns pro today is much better than the guy turning pro 5 or 6 years ago with no amateur fights. You know, they're just so much more polished and skilled, and I mean, they are fighters, and some of these amateurs are excellent fighters. In fact, two fighters that were on my team last year, and they were both national champs with Fighter Source, they fight in Bellator now. They literally, after one pro fight, were in Bellator. So the Fighter Source League is it's 8 teams throughout the nation. And as a team owner, I'm the team owner of the Southern California team. I get to pick my fighters. And I pick 6 male and 2 female fighters from weight classes 135 up to 205 for the men. And on the female side, it's 125 and 135. And we will go and take on a team. Like this year, we took on the team from Denver. Now, once the tournament starts, it is a single elimination event for the fighters. So if they lose, they're out. And, you know, whichever team has the most fighters win, the team wins that round. So we have now advanced ourselves, and this Saturday is going to be the national finals at Harrah's Resort, Southern California. And another awesome thing about this is we are on CBS Sports Network. And so we are, it is an amateur event that is broadcast on a major network on CBS Sports Network, 96 million households nationwide. And so it's really, getting back to the ultimate experience, you now have amateurs fighting other amateurs from, you know, New York, Alabama, Florida, Colorado. And these are all good guys. These are not, there's no cream puffs in there. There's no made fights. And you're fighting on national TV, so you get to go through that experience of being in a real big show with the cameras, the lights. I don't care who you are, you feel the pressure, and you're nervous, and As a team owner, I get nervous for my guys. And so this year, Saturday being the national finals, the winners will be the national champions, and they will make up Team USA. And this year, Team USA is actually going to go to Brazil in March, and they're going to fight in Brazil. So, and that'll also be on CBS Sports Network. So not only do you get to fight other fighters throughout the country and travel throughout the country, you're going to get to go overseas and fight. And you know, you just, there's no, in any sport you do or in anything you do in life, there's no price you can put on experience. And that's really one of the coolest things about the Fighter Source League.
Jason, Sean here, and I guess you can kind of hit it, you just hit it on the head a little bit, is that as an amateur, you always look for that one goal of achievement at some form of level. And the thing that I think intrigues me the most is the fact that you're fighting for a spot for Team USA. And that alone is huge, because not a lot of people get the opportunity to compete in the Olympics or anything of that nature. So when you have an opportunity like this, you really can't pass it up, but it makes you that much more hungry.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, the underlying development for the league, because you mentioned the Olympics, the underlying development is, you know, all these other sports are able to come up with Team USA for the Olympic team. You know, boxing has the golden gloves. Wrestling will have the Olympic trials and duels and things like that. MMA has nothing. And you know, there's a big push to make MMA an Olympic sport. So we're really kind of developing the NCAA of mixed martial arts here in the United States, so that when it does become an actual Olympic sport, we have an infrastructure to come up with Team USA. You know, the league's expanding to 16 teams next year, so it's really exciting. But it is hungry. You guys would be surprised how, and it just baffles me, and I'm sure you've probably seen this, some fighters don't want to fight anyone tough. They just want to have a great record and walk into the bar or the nightclub and tell every girl that they're 8-0 amateur and they're the champ of this promotion and that promotion. But they really haven't tested themselves. They really haven't fought anybody. And I've literally had people pass this opportunity because it's too tough. And that just blows my mind, because if you want to be a professional – and anything you do, you want to challenge yourself, and you always want to be prepared for opportunities. And when opportunities come up, you want to be able to seize that opportunity.
Absolutely, Jason. And that comes to a big, I guess you could say, word, phrase, whatever you want to call it, that Tristan and I have coined over the course of the last several months, is that in the world of MMA, you can't be afraid to evolve. If you want to be successful in this field, you have to evolve. If you don't, the field's just going to leave you behind. And you see a lot of the mixed people. The people that rise to the top are the people that are willing to grind for what they want. The people that fail are the guys that just sit back and do exactly what you said. Let's just go ahead and pad my stats and call it is what it is.
Yeah, no, it's and you know, there's for me, it's just we agree to disagree. I just don't believe that's the way to build someone up as a fighter. And especially as an amateur, you should test your boundaries everywhere to see where you are, because once you turn pro, your record's 0-0. So you might as well put yourself through the real hard tests to see where you stand before you turn pro. That way you know exactly where you are as a pro, and then you know what to work on.
Jason Weiner here with the Cross Brothers, the Sports Warriors. You coming to Southern California and from being from Fresno area, putting fights up there, and you're coming down here. We've already got some groups that are establishing their grind here in the San Diego area. What's going to make you stand out over them? What's going to make you be able to pull those fighters away from those promotions and make this a bigger area in this area?
You know, that's an interesting question. I don't look at it like, I'm pulling fighters from other promotions or anything like that, because I think that a fighter, when they're developing themselves and when they're growing, you know, that it's good to say you're loyal, but it's also, you have to be smart with yourself and say, you know, I'm here to get better. I'm here to experience different things. And I encourage fighters up north, you know, fight for other promotions. There's very rarely that I have some type of exclusivity on anybody, because I feel that hurts the fighter. Now, if they're pulling out of a show to go into another show, that's another story, because that's just not good for business for anyone, and it creates a bad reputation for the fighter. But, you know, but for us, we've always treated the fighters very well. I lose sleep at night, literally. If a fighter loses a fight and, he loses an opponent, falls out, because I know how hard these guys train. I know about weight cutting. And I lose sleep trying to find them an opponent, because it's I'll do anything I can to make sure they're matched up, because they've worked so hard to be in that fight. So, you know, it's really about taking care of the fighters, doing what you say you're going to do with them, and putting on an entertaining event for the fans.
Jason, and I guess that's where the next question comes from. The fans have never seen an up-and-comers promotion fight. What can they expect at Harrah's Casino January 9th? What can they expect from what they're going to see from the venue? What are they going to expect from seeing from their first show?
You know, the venue's awesome. Harrah's Resort at Southern California there, they've been outstanding. This venue where we're at has only been open maybe a year. It was part of their new expansion. It's a beautiful setup we're going to have in there. We're going to have some great production. I mean, really, there's not going to be production like this for an amateur show that anyone's seen in this marketplace. It is pro-level production. The fight card you see with the quality of fights that are in this national finals, three of these fights are actually IFKA national title fights, where you've got the number one fighter in the state of New York fighting the number one fighter from Alabama. And these guys are not slouches, you know. I had an excellent 135 pounder on my Fresno team, and he got his lunch handed to him by the Alabama fighter, who's 13-1, and my guy was 7-0, and I felt pretty good going into that fight. But so they're gonna see excellent fights. They're gonna see excellent production. It's gonna run really smooth. I mean, it's gonna be like going to a major produced professional event.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, I have on my one of the two fights that I'm looking forward to watching, I have Bobby Ledkins versus Patrick Mix as the number one fight on the entire card that I think everybody needs to watch out for.
Yeah, that's gonna be great. I mean, Patrick Mix is an excellent wrestler, very athletic. I believe he's 9-0. He's undefeated. And then Ledkins is 13-1, and he's tall. He's got to be 5'11". You know, he's lengthy. He's got great reach. That's going to be an outstanding fight. There's some other two. 170 pounds is going to be an outstanding fight. The girls, there's some really good girls on the fight card, and we love to watch the girl fights.
Jason Weiner here of UPC Unlimited, here with the Ducrosse Brothers Sports Warriors with Sean and Tristan Ducrosse. Tristan here, you just mentioned the girl fights. We are advocates for the women fighters, especially trying to get them out here in San Diego, because they're so far in between. But you have two really solid girls that I'm interested in watching. It's Courtney King and Elizabeth Van Der Horst. Both those two are beasts, and you have them on this card.
Yeah, they're going to be good. Courtney is, Courtney's just what you want. I mean, she's good as a fighter. She's tall. She's good looking. She's a real nice, great person. She is a tough fighter, and she's going to be fun to watch. She's got a tough fight against a very experienced fighter, but Courtney is, this is going to be a big test for Courtney, because if she wins this fight, it's really going to elevate her, because I mean, you know, when it comes to the female fighters, they're more of the whole package that people look at for the next level than the guys, because, you know, guys, we're not very good looking to begin with. So that doesn't matter. But when girls are good looking and they can fight, that is a real bonus at the next level of elevating their game. Amanda's on the San Diego team. Amanda Jones, and she is fighting at 125 pounds. So I am all for Amanda. She is a really tough girl, and you know, I have a soft, I truly believe in my heart that California MMA is just better than the rest of the nation. And I'm just being selfish there, but you know, so I really hope Amanda pulls it off, because she's going to have a tough fight, and I think she's going to surprise some people.
You just said it. San Diego, California, is right now is probably the fastest growing MMA community, and the hotbed right now that is almost catching up to what Las Vegas was for years in mixed martial arts.
Yeah, no, it is. It's a great marketplace, and you know, it's we're going to have a lot of the different gyms there to see what we do, and you know, I'm just looking forward to building some great relationships here and putting on some great events for the fans and the fighters, and you know, treating the fighters the way they should be treated, and helping them elevate their career and potentially move on to bigger promotions than myself.
Jason, Sean here. Have you found it hard getting women fights consistently, just like a lot of other promotions seems like they have a hard time getting women's fights consistently? Have you found that a little bit difficult?
It is a little difficult, yes. You know, part of it with women's MMA, you know, they haven't caught up to men's, because, you know, they just haven't been around as long. And so there's a wider gap in talent between the top girls and everyone else. And, you know, where men, that gap is not nearly as broad, but in women there isn't. So then it becomes tough to get those girls that are good, get them fights, because other girls don't want to fight them, and their skill set is just several levels below them. And so it just becomes slim pickings to be able to make those matchups.
The Ducross Brothers here with Jason Weiner of UPC Unlimited. Tristan here. Well, one last question before we wrap this up. I want to ask you, is there a future for UPC Unlimited as well as a fighter source out here to do more shows in San Diego after this one?
Absolutely. I truly believe that. And, you know, we're looking at doing multiple shows this year at Harrah's Resort in Southern California there. And the fighter source will be, we will always have a San Diego team. And as the league grows and as the popularity grows, and I mean, especially, you know, once these guys see themselves fighting on TV and on CBS Sports Network, it really starts to bring home the opportunity that a fighter will have. And, you know, we're looking to grow the marketplace and get as many gyms and athletes and fighters and trainers involved in what we're doing that we possibly can. You know, for us, it's, you know, the more people involved, the better it is for business, for everybody.
There you have it. Up and comers, Jason Weiner and crew, Harrah's Casino, January 9th. They're not done yet. San Diego's a big hotbed. More to come. Thank you, Jason.
Hey, thanks, guys. We'll see you Saturday. Doors open 7 o'clock.
All right, there you have it. Don't be late, folks. You got to check out UPC if you're in the San Diego area. All right, everybody, we are back. That was our interview with Jason Weiner of UPC Unlimited with his team at the Fighter Source out here at Harrah's Casino, January 9th. This Saturday is going down. Like he said, I looked at the setup of this event, and I was like, telling you, I was like, you got to look at this event and how this set up. Because the way that it was set up, just by the sheer images, and I was like, dude, this is pro-level stuff. This is pro-level kind of stuff. They're expecting to sell out the entire arena. You haven't seen that for an amateur fighting organization that's came out this way to fight in a venue like a Harrah's Casino and be confident in what they're doing. And they are going to put on a show for the fans. And it's going to be interesting to see, as an amateur promotion, what they're able to do and what their fights are going to look forward to. The two fights that I'm looking forward to, as he touched on it, was Bobby Lutkins versus Patrick Mix in the bantamweight. Patrick Mix, like he said, is a world-class wrestler.
These two guys are going to want to take the fight to the mat. These guys both finish his fights. They both want to submit their opponent. It's going to be an interesting one. The other one that you got to watch out for is Justin Gonzalez versus Ronnie Tatsui. Sorry if I butchered his name. I'll get it right eventually. But that fight's interesting. 7-0 versus 9-0. You got a striker versus a Muay Thai fighter. These two guys are going to want to do nothing more than stand in front of each other and throw down with the best of them. So, Harris Casino, Valley Center, California, January 9th. You heard it. The doors open at 7 p.m. Be there. And you can also meet your boys, the DeCrosse Brothers, the Sports Warriors as well. 8 title fights. 2 women title fights. That doesn't get you pumped up and psyched, though? I don't know what will. But let's not get it. Let's also not forget that for the 3rd time, I feel like I want to be like I'm feeling it. If only I could do the spin-a-rooney. But for the 3rd time, there will be a combat sports fighter hosting SNL. Ronda Rousey sets another milestone as she will host SNL. Really? Joins Marvin Hagler and George Foreman as the only other combat sports fighters to grace it. Yes, there's been other athletes that has hosted SNL, but only 3 fighters have ever hosted SNL. And now only 1 MMA fighter to host SNL, and it's Ronda Rousey. I still think it should have been Gina Carano. We think Gina Carano should be the first for everything if she didn't leave MMA. Or Misha Tate. But it goes down January 23rd, and the musical guest will be Selena Gomez. An MMA fighter with a pop singer. You'd think it'd be a little bit more aggressive, right? But, you know, we're the DeCrosse Brothers. Oh, can't forget that, too. If you follow us, if you follow our boys from Fightbook MMA, they went ahead and created their first ever
award.
We are up for the fan favorite podcast. So make sure you head over to fightbookmma.com, check out their awards, vote for your boys. We're sitting 2nd right now. So come on, let's take over the number 1 spot.
And also, go vote for the hottest MMA girl, Misha Tate. Till next time, we're the DeCrosse Brothers Sports Warriors. We're out.
Let's get it on!
Sprawl and brawl, ground and pound. Get ready for an MMA showdown. Now the ultimate Octagon Insider, Sean and Tristan Ducrosse.